On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We meet with two Republican state lawmakers this hour, starting with State Senator Mary Felskowski of Tomahawk. We want to cover a lot of ground with her, why GOP lawmakers oppose a statewide mask mandate, what budget priorities she has, how she feels about legalizing marijuana. But first, gray wolves. State law requires the wolf hunt to happen since the gray wolf is no longer listed as an endangered species. The DNR announced last year the hunt will happen this November, allowing time to calculate harvest quota. How do you feel about a wolf hunting season? 800-642-1234. Senator Mary Felskowski represents the northeastern corner of our state. She's on the legislature's Joint Finance Committee and vice chair of the Senate's Natural Resources Committee. Senator Felskowski, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be with you this chilly Wisconsin morning.
This chilly morning, yes. Why do you support the state holding a wolf hunt and trapping season immediately?
So I think you need to look at the history of what's gone on surrounding the gray wolf. The gray wolf was originally put on the endangered species list back in 1974. As time went on, Wisconsin was given the order to manage the gray wolf population, and they did. And the gray wolf saw a remarkable comeback in the state of Wisconsin, mainly, I would say, in the northern one-third of the state. You know, a lot of wild land up there, a lot of wild areas. But what happened is the DNR had set a goal of 700 to 850 gray wolves that they thought the state could handle population-wise. Well, the gray wolf exploded way past that. In 2011, the legislature put down a law that we would now start managing the gray wolf population just as we manage all of our other predator populations. This is nothing new, science-based, and the DNR was given that authority. So we had at that time three hunts where we had gray wolf hunting, all very successful, and the hunt lasted minimum of like a couple of weeks up to maybe a month and a half, and the quotas were met. Along comes a lawsuit from a lot of the far-leaning left groups, Sierra Club, Humane Society, and a judge that has never stepped foot in Wisconsin, does not know our population, does not know our makeup, put the gray wolf back on the endangered species list. That was challenged, and they've now come off of the endangered species list again. In the Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, last November, started to write the rule to delist the gray wolf. So we knew it was coming. Lots of time to prepare.
But the DNR says it does need more time to develop a harvest quota and to listen to residents who feel very strongly about this issue. Are those reasonable justifications to delay the season until November?
Absolutely not. The DNR actually does know the population of the gray wolf. It's not like they have not been tracking it. We just had an informational hearing, which in the Senate and the Assembly, where we had specialists coming in. We had a lot of farmers coming in, a lot of different people coming in to talk about having that wolf hunt. The DNR failed to even show up to the meeting. They didn't even come to the meeting. You have the legislature have a committee hearing of both houses, the Assembly and the Senate, and the DNR did not show up. They didn't even come to answer questions. Very, very disappointed in that, but I guess I shouldn't be surprised. The thing I think you need to realize is the gray wolf is in a third of the state. If you had that same gray wolf permeating all 72 counties of the state, you would have a wolf hunt. We've had 457 animals in the last 3 years killed by the gray wolf. Over 300 livestock, 18 pets, 10 horses, and then quite a few hunting dogs when they're out in the woods hunting.
I want to just jump in here and reintroduce you. We're talking with State Senator Mary Felskowski from Tomahawk, vice chair of the Senate's Natural Resources Committee. We're looking at the DNR's decision to not hold a wolf hunting and trapping season this winter. You can join in with your thoughts. Do you think that there should be hunting of the gray wolf? Should there be a season immediately? Join in at 800-642-1234. State Senator, hunters and livestock owners have received more than $2.7 million from the DNR for wolf predation cases over the past three decades. Is the state compensating owners enough for their losses?
I don't think it's a matter of compensating. If you have a family dog that is your pet, and your dog is in your backyard, or your dog goes for a walk with you and is killed by a gray wolf. I have a constituent who walks regularly in Otter Lake State Park, and he had his hunting dog killed 20 yards away from him. So there's a little bit of an emotion goes on there. So I give him the $200 he spent on the dog. Do you think that makes him okay? Does that make him whole? I have constituents that don't allow their children to play outside unless mom and dad are outside with a rifle or a pistol because of the gray wolf. So it's not, and I know that sounds extreme for the people that may live in Madison and other areas, but you don't live in an area where the gray wolf is. Then we can even talk the economics of having an overpopulated gray wolf. The white-tailed deer season brings hundreds of millions of dollars into this state on an annual basis. In four northern counties, the wolves have killed more deer population than hunters have for like the last 6 years. We don't have a deer gun season. We don't have a bow season anymore. I mean, if you go out in the woods, I've got numerous people telling me on a couple thousand acre track, they don't even see deer tracks. It's wolves.
So if
you have an overpopulation and of wolves and the food supply goes down, they're going to find a new supply. And that's going to be domestic animals.
If a wolf hunting and trapping season would happen this winter, what do you think the limits should look like for hunters and trappers?
So the DNR is proposing right now that there's a little over 1,100 wolves is what their estimation, and I would argue it's closer to 2,000. They should bring it down to that 750 or 850 number that they last had. Very easy. It's not like they've stopped tracking the wolves because there wasn't a hunt. The data is still there.
And on which lands could hunters do this? Where would you propose the season be held?
Wherever there's a gray wolf population, which they also know. A lot of it is in the northern counties. But as this is happening, as we haven't had a season, the wolf is moving more towards the southern counties. They're moving into Marathon, Clark, and Wood, where normally they were only in the one-third top of the state. The problem with the gray wolf is it's an emotional decision by some, not a science-based. Wolves look like dogs. They're very majestic. They're beautiful animals. And people have a hard time with the thought that we need to manage them. We've managed predator populations in this state for the last 100 years. And we do it, and we do it wisely. And we do it science-based. That's how we manage a bear population. That's how we manage a bobcat population.
We have State Senator Mary Felskowski of Tomahawk on the line. The DNR has said it wants to be transparent about input on a wolf hunting season and set a hunt for next winter in November. How do you feel about the hunting and trapping of gray wolves? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with State Senator Felskowski here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with State Senator Mary Felskowski, and we will move to the clash over the mask mandate and her budget priorities in a moment. But first, it's your thoughts on a gray wolf season. How do you feel about litigation on both sides of this issue, the pressure to hold a wolf hunt immediately, pressure to put gray wolves back on the endangered species list? 800-642-1234. And State Senator Mary Felskowski of Tomahawk is with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's bring in John now in Waukesha with thoughts on this. John, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been a longtime hunter in Wisconsin and used to hunt. My family did up in northern Wisconsin for probably 20 years. And we've actually stopped, my dad and I, going up there because of, just like the senator said, we saw more wolves than deer in the woods for probably 5-7 years straight. I've had wolves run up to within about 15 yards of me. I remember when this whole when the reintroduction of the wolf population started, I think, maybe the senator knows, but I think the original target from the DNR was like 100 wolves. And then they got to 300, and then it got to 700, 800, and it just seems like the target just keeps changing. And I think that people who are against this, often if they lived up in that area or if they were affected by this, it would just be a different story. So,
John, thank you. Yeah, let's hear from State Senator Felskowski. Go ahead.
Well, I couldn't agree more. You know, there's, as I said before, there's a huge economic effect. you know, not only the tourism industry that comes along with the hunting season, but also land values. I mean, land values have just plummeted in northern Wisconsin because of the lack of hunting. I mean, people buy hunting land in Columbia counties and other areas where there's actually a deer population, and our land values up north have plummeted because we do not have that deer population anymore. Huge economic effect. But I think there's another thing here that I think we need to really focus on, is in 2011, a law was passed that says the DNR shall have a wolf season between November and February. Shall, not may, shall. So we're seeing the DNR literally thumbing its nose at the law as written and saying, well, we're just not going to do it. And I think that's a very slippery slope.
Well, I want to jump in here. I want to jump in here and bring in Randy now in Adams with thoughts here. Randy, go ahead.
Well, I kind of agree with the DNR that they should not have a season until November. I know we have, from the wolf counts, there's like over 1,000 animals in the state of Wisconsin, and we're supposed to be down to like 350 or something like that. So there is a lot of more than what this state's supposed to have, and most of them are up north. And I believe that it's going to be harder and harder. I think the DNR has to have control when they are going to have it. And I believe the state should be in control of it rather than the federal. And that's what caused this problem in the first place, is it became, they put on the endangered species list and then we couldn't hunt them at all. And the state had no control and they kept going. But I think it's going to be harder and harder to control anything as far as hunting season goes, as the more and more people we get into this country. There's people, I just think we're going to just have to go with the, it takes a while and takes time to set up. It takes time to set up when you're going to hunt and the times and stuff like that. You can't just go out in the woods and start shooting.
Yeah, Randy, thank you for that. And, you know, Randy is saying he trusts the DNR here, and it takes time to set these seasons up.
Well, I think if Randy did a little bit more research, as most other people, that's already set up. That's already in statute. And it's already been done through the rules process when we had a hunt. So I think Randy kind of more or less made my case, where he's saying that we should have less wolves, and we were supposed to have less wolves, and the law states, and the DNR's quota, according to him, it's almost 700 wolves more than what we're supposed to have. I would say that that's not true. We're supposed to be right around that 850 statewide. The research is there. The season is there. The law is there. You know, and I think when we have laws, they need to be followed. We don't start allowing people to pick and choose which laws we follow and which laws we don't. And if the DNR had an issue, they had plenty of time. They had over 62 days to implement a hunt. And we've done this in the past. This is nothing new. They have the data. They have the resources. They just chose not to. And I would say that they chose not to because they were waiting for another lawsuit at the federal level that may have put the hunt on hold. We do have a lawsuit from Hunter Nation and the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty bringing the DNR to court for not following the law and to institute a season. And
I'm gonna,
that needs to be done. It.
I'm going to jump in here. We're talking with Republican State Senator Mary Felskowski, who represents the northeastern corner of the state and sits on the legislature's budget committee. We are going to move on to other matters beyond the wolf hunt here, and you can join in. What do you think of the legislature overturning Governor Evers' mask mandate and the governor declaring another one? 800-642-1234. Senator, last week you voted to strike down the governor's emergency order requiring masks. The governor then turned around, issued a new order. Should the legislature vote down the new governor's order?
I think now it's time for the courts to act. You know, we brought suit against the governor for the illegal actions that he did, and the court looked at us and said, you have the authority to act, and you should. So that is exactly what we did. We struck down an illegal order by the governor. As you can see, there's kind of a theme here. Illegal actions by the DNR, not following the law. Governor acting illegally also. So we voted it down. Now I think it's time, so that we're not playing this ping pong. I'd come in and vote it down again tomorrow. The governor would put a new one in place. So now I'd like to see the Supreme Court act and, you know, make the decision.
So if the issue is truly not about masks and it's about the governor's powers and overreach, as you're saying, would you support a new bill that would be a standalone statewide mask order that would remain in effect until the conclusion of the national emergency declared by the president of the United States?
So what I would say is I will look at any piece of legislation that comes through. The governor has numerous legal challenges to do that. So he can put out an emergency rule in about 5 days, and it would go to JCRAR, the committee, and then the committee would look at it, approve it, or send it back. But now it's time to do some negotiating on that. And I think that, you know, if the governor did that, that would be when we'd start having a conversation. But I'll be real honest, I will never tell you I'll say yes to a bill until I've read it, because there could be other things that are involved in it. We're also seeing a trend. We're seeing a great decrease in the number of cases, the number of hospitalizations. We're seeing other states that are allowing their mandates to expire. We're seeing them allow their capacity restrictions to expire. In fact, our neighbor, Iowa, just did so. And they're opening up their businesses and getting back to normal. So I think that if anything that would come through would have to be something that is very well negotiated through.
Wisconsin.
Not a one size fits all.
Yeah. I mean, our state is suffering from the effects of this pandemic. Still, the legislature has done very little to provide support. Why can't lawmakers work together on solving the issues of the pandemic?
Well, I think in order to work together, there has to be communication. And when you just continually issue illegal orders and not start a dialogue with the legislature, that's not working together. You know, there's a very different atmosphere in different parts of the state, just like with the attitude towards wolves, maybe in the northern part of the state. I mean, my schools are open. Last week, I sat on the floor and listened to the Madison legislators and the Milwaukee legislators that, you know, they need to open their schools. Well, if we're following the science, the CDC and the Society of Pediatrics have said schools should be open since day one. They should have never closed them. Children are better off in school and less likely to catch the disease and spread it. Northern schools have been open in person and virtual all year.
So where should people be required to wear masks? And should this be a patchwork where it comes down to local, you know, city and county decisions?
I don't know that it needs to be government. Businesses have required masks way before government did. And if I choose to go into a business that requires a mask, I put a mask on. I don't think that government needs to be the one to do this. And we're seeing that in areas of the state, and we're seeing it in other states who have lower death rates, lower infection rates, and better results. And they haven't devastated their economy and their small businesses also.
So you're saying government should stay out of whether people wear masks, that people have the right to go anywhere without a mask?
That's my opinion, yes. I think that people are personally responsible, and I've seen it in other areas, and I've seen it in other states.
Let's move on to budget. You know, Governor Evers is scheduled to announce his proposed two-year state budget. You're on the legislature's finance committee that reviews the budget bill. What are you looking for? What are your top budget priorities?
Well, number one, balanced budget. And right now we've gotten some great news. I mean, there is an excess of money of almost $1 billion over and above what we anticipated in this cycle. You know, prior to COVID hitting, this state was going in an amazing direction, as well as the whole country economically, and that's carried forward. We've done some things in the last 10 years to ensure economic prosperity in this state, and it's helped. But we don't have revenue numbers for the upcoming budget cycle, that two-year cycle. So until we see that, I think we need to be very cautious on how we're going to spend. Revenues could be tight. As always, I want to make sure that our most vulnerable population are taken care of, and that we're not overtaxing people to the point where we're taking more money from them than what they can afford to give up. So keeping taxes low, taking care of the things that's government's responsibility, infrastructure, schools, and taking care of our most vulnerable, those will be the priorities going forward in this session.
Governor Evers is proposing legalizing marijuana as part of the state budget. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that I'm all for medical marijuana. I've actually written legislation on it. But Governor Evers knows with the Republican-controlled assembly is not going to pass recreational marijuana. So to me, this is very divisive. Why put that in a budget? Why start out that way when you know it's not going to pass? Why not try to work on things that you know we can get done together and have a little bit of unity? When you say, why can't we work together? Isn't this just a prime example? When you throw things out there that you know are absolute non-starters. Let's work on things that are. Let's increase the Medicaid rates for nursing homes. Let's make sure that we have oral health care throughout the state. Let's get PBM and pharmacy control under control. Those are things that we can work on jointly. And throwing out recreational marijuana is just a divisive action right now.
State Senator, thank you for joining us.
You bet. Have a great week.
You too. Mary Felskowski, a Republican state senator from Tomaha. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Senate President Chris Kapinga. That's after a news update here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have State Senator Chris Kapinga of Delafield on the line now. He and his colleagues in the Senate sent Governor Evers a $100 million COVID relief bill Friday, which the governor swiftly vetoed. It marks 10 months of the two parties unable to see eye to eye over how to control the spread of COVID and how best to assist residents, schools, businesses in these trying times. Where do we go from here? What do you want to convey to the Senate president? Do you think Wisconsin needs a statewide mask mandate? 800-642-1234 to join in. Senator Chris Kapinga represents a district to the west of Milwaukee that includes parts of Waukesha. Senator Kapinga, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. Glad to be here.
So the science shows that widespread use of face masks prevents infections of COVID, which has killed more than 6,000 people in our state. Why are Republicans opposed to a statewide mask mandate?
It's actually not the mask mandate that the Republicans have from the beginning gone after. It's the emergency order power that the governor has exceeded. And we've been very consistent about this, where, remember, the mask mandate and several other orders are underneath an overarching emergency orders issued by the governor. And what the Republican legislature has been saying from day one is, we support the first 60 days. We understand, you know, we put that in place to make sure the governor could act immediately if an emergency like this came up. And we all agree COVID came out of nowhere. No one really knew when it came about how we're going to handle this, what it actually does. So that first 60 days was critically important for the governor to be able to just get out there and do what he needed to do to make sure people were protected. After that 60 days, then the governor, and during that 60 days, actually, the governor should have been working with the legislature saying, we know the 60-day emergency order is going to end, so what do we do in order to move forward? And what the governor has done consistently is he has not come to the legislature after that point. He just continues to reissue an emergency order. And what we've contended, and this is in the courts right now, is the governor does not have the authority after that initial 60 days to issue an emergency order and then take steps unilaterally. He is supposed to be working with the legislature. So that's really important to understand.
And so if this issue isn't about masks, then why are Republicans focused on consolidating power? Why is it all about taking power away from the governor in the pandemic?
Well, actually, the governor has consolidated the power through his actions. So in normal course of business, the legislature and the governor in these situations, they work together. There's a process called rulemaking authority. And the governor, if he sees, hey, I need to be able to do something here, he comes to the legislature. We work through the process.
Which can take quite a long time. Rulemaking isn't something that can happen overnight. And with COVID, you have to act quickly.
Correct. But the governor, remember, the governor had 60 days. So he issued the emergency rule order back in, I think it was March of last year. And then during that 60 days, what typically would happen is the governor would come to the legislature and say, hey, I know we've got this 60-day mark, so let's start working together now. And that would have been plenty of time to get any emergency rules through and approved and worked through with the legislature. But he did not do that. He didn't pick up the phone. He didn't come over and say, hey, we need to work on this together. I know that I don't have the authority to do this. He just unilaterally made the choice to do that. And that is not a safe position, because it's COVID now, but what happens when it's another issue? And I talk to my friends who are Democrats on this and remind them that, what if this is a Republican governor and they choose to act unilaterally after a 60-day emergency order and start putting things into place that you don't think are appropriate? That divided government, split government, is there to protect everyone from unilateral power and authority. That's not how Republicans or the Republic works.
We're talking with Senator Chris Kapinga, the president of the Republican-controlled Wisconsin Senate. We're discussing COVID legislative issues amid the pandemic. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Kevin is with us from the North Woods. Kevin, hi, go ahead.
Good morning. Yes, I'd just like to come at this from the food share angle of this, and how that was going to be jeopardized with your bill to get rid of the mask mandate. And I refuse to believe that you guys didn't know about that. I think you were just trying to sneak it through because you Wisconsin Republicans.
Okay, Kevin, I'm going to jump in here. And Senator Kapinga, what is the impact on food share and what has been done in the legislature to not lose that $49 million?
Yeah, there's a fix to that. It was an amendment that was put through to ensure it's $49 million. It's an extra added amount to the food share during the pandemic through the CARES Act that went through federally. So there's specific language in the federal legislation that as the attorneys that we use in the legislature drafted the bill, they did not catch that. The wording had to be very specifically or carefully worded to make sure we didn't put that in jeopardy. That was missed, and we actually put an amendment through to fix that as soon as we found that out. So that actually is not an issue at this point, should the legislation be signed.
Sandy in Oshkosh called in, couldn't stay with us, and Sandy wants to know, why haven't Republican lawmakers proposed their own legislation on wearing masks?
Because the Republican legislature has been focused on having a discussion with the governor's office. So we've been waiting for the governor to come to us, and if you look at the speaker in the assembly actually has talked about, and I think it was last week or the week before, he issued a public letter so that people saw that, hey, the assembly has had the discussion internally, and we are willing to talk with the governor about specific situations where we're comfortable looking at a mask mandate. The Senate is not there yet.
Where are you on the issue? I mean, where do you stand on masks?
Yeah. Where I stand on masks is, I think after a year of being in place, or close to a year now, I think Wisconsin understands the risks. And I don't feel that putting a mask mandate at this point is necessary. I think people are mature enough, and we know enough now after 11 months of being in lockdown. We know who's at risk. We know how there's certain age groups that are definitely more vulnerable than others. Actually, this last weekend, I read an article where Fauci came out and said that children, for instance, school-age children, especially the younger ones, are extremely low risk. And they're saying, let's get these kids back into the classroom because they're lower risk. And on the other hand, we know that folks like my mom, who's in her 70s, she has to be very careful, and she is, as far as how much she's actually going into public. But we know that now. And remember, back when COVID hit, we just did not understand the impacts of, hey, who is at risk and who is not at risk or who is at low risk. So now that we know that, people can take their course of action. We still have the CDC coming out and saying, hey, here's our guidelines. And those are shifting actually over time, based on what we're learning about COVID. So that's the position I'm taking. We still know that people need to be careful. Social distancing is critically important, cleanliness. And again, back to my mother, who knows she has to be careful with how much she actually goes out into public because she's a very high risk.
Let's bring in Barb now in Rice Lake. Hi, Barb. Go ahead.
Hi. I don't think your guest is being quite candid about this. The way I remember what happened was the legislature was not in session, and the governor asked them to call a special session so that they could address this before the 60 days ran out, and the legislature refused.
Senator Kapinga, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, we were in session, Barb. The legislature was in session effective last year. It started, I think, the second week in January. So we were in session. We could have taken action. Even if we're out of session, though, the rulemaking process, committees still meet. So what happens is the governor says, hey, here's something that I would like to work on. He can propose the rules, and committees still meet all the time. So it goes into a committee. The committee has the hearing, proposes the rule out of committee to the general body, but we were actually in session, so we could have worked through that process at any point in time. We're in session up through, I want to say we were in session through April or May, but as you indicated, Barb, the special session call, that really was the governor's. He wanted to highlight something and say, hey, it's a way a governor can make a fairly quick political point, and I want to highlight how important this is, but the legislature was meeting, and we easily could have worked through the rule process. There was no hindrance there with the legislature being out of session. That's actually not the case.
We have State Senate President Chris Kapinga discussing what happens next with elected officials unable to be on the same page with mask wearing, with COVID relief. Who do you trust in the ongoing pandemic? Do you look to the governor? Do you look to the legislature? How do you want Republican lawmakers to work with Evers and Democrats? Where do you see room for compromise? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with State Senate President Chris Kapinga of Delafield. In our state, 6,054 people have perished from COVID. Governor Evers vetoed a COVID relief bill Friday, 296 days since the last piece of legislation had passed the legislature. Democrats introduced a standalone statewide mask order proposal. And still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in John now in Sparta. Hi, John.
Hi, Kate. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Hi, Chris. I've been sitting back and watching this debate go on for a long time. I'm basically stuck at home. I mean, I'm handicapped. I get out like once a month. And every time I get out, I mean, all these stores, you go in, half the store, they're not wearing masks. It's like, why do I have to, I get out. Why am I subjected to this? I look at like New Zealand. New Zealand, as soon as the virus came around, they did a mask. They said everyone will wear a mask. They're basically COVID-free, But yet, it seems anything that's, Republican. I mean, it's like, why not work with the governor?
John, thanks. State Senator Kapinga, John's saying public health orders that, masks are one of the only tools here to stop and prevent a resurgence of the pandemic.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, John. I was actually in New Zealand when this all went down, and we got out. My daughter and I went on a daddy-daughter trip there, and we were there, and we got out 2 days before they locked down, so I'm very familiar with what they've done there. And anybody who hasn't been there has got to go because it's amazingly beautiful. But the mask mandate, again, the information, if you look at the data, and I'm a big data guy, I'm a CPA by trade, so I watch numbers, but I've watched masks and no masks in place in the state. And if you watch the dashboard, and anybody who hasn't seen the Hospital Association dashboard, just Google it. You can go there. You can watch on a daily basis, which we do.
570 currently, yeah, mm-hmm. In the hospital.
There you go. Yep, Yep, yep. And I think the ICU, which again, the number that we watch is the ICU beds, because the healthcare workers have said, we want to make sure that we don't run into a problem taking care of somebody if they get sick. So we always watch that number. But if you look at that number, and the state has been in a mask mandate, and then we were not in a mask mandate, then we went back into a mask mandate, what those numbers have done is they have not fluctuated based on the wearing of masks. So when we had the big spike in November, which is second week of November, that's a very typical, unfortunately, time frame for flu-like illnesses to take place. So if you look at history, second week of November, we always spike way up. Just naturally, because it starts getting colder, people start going inside and they're closer together.
That had nothing to do with the holidays and congregant gatherings?
Well, that does too. That actually started, remember, holidays are Thanksgiving, so you got that towards the end of November. The spike started way before that. It started at the beginning of November, and it typically does, again, because the weather starts getting colder. So if you look at that, we were under a mask mandate at that point, and we spiked way up. So in looking at the numbers, when we have masks and we don't have masks, I'm not seeing fluctuations based on the mask wearing. I'm seeing fluctuations based on the proximity of people when they're going in, indoors. And we know the number one place people contract the virus is actually at home. When they're in their own home. So that's something to always keep in mind as we talk about mask or no mask. And again, this is a discussion about the governor's powers and his ability to unilaterally act and not have a discussion with the legislature. That's not how our system of government is set up.
Let's bring in Isaac in McFarland with reaction. Isaac, hi.
Hi. My comment will be to this senator is that he is talking from both sides of his mouth. When Scott Walker was on, they increased his powers. When Governor Evers came in, they tried to take some powers away from him. This doesn't make any sense. You went to school for 4 years and you did college. Why are you going there? Why taking Mark's mandate off in the middle of pandemic? You just play into the French part of your party.
Okay, Isaac, thank you. And Chris Kapinga, go ahead here, looking at reducing powers in a Democratic administration.
Yeah, so just naturally think about this. And we're talking about the power of lawmaking is held by the legislature. We're the will of the people. And when it's a Republican legislature and it's a Republican governor, we naturally know that, for instance, Scott Walker is going to line up with our value system or our system of policy much closer than Governor Evers. And the reverse is true. If you look at Democrat-controlled legislature, they're naturally going to agree with the governor more if it was Governor Evers versus Governor Walker. So the legislature has the authority and the ability to see that power out and to pull that power back in based on who's in the governor's office. And again, it's not just a Republican thing where the Republicans say, well, we're going to do it in this situation and not in this situation. It's very consistent with history. So just keep that in mind, that lawmaking authority is, in our form of system of government, held in the legislature, and we cede it and we pull it back based on who's going to be in the governor's office. So I want to make sure people understand that. That's a very natural thing. There's trust, and then there's less trust if somebody doesn't line up with what we feel is the right direction.
Dave now in Madison with thoughts. Dave, hi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling this morning first to express my astonishment at what I'm hearing this morning. Your first guest sees no hypocrisy whatever in saying that people have the freedom not to wear a mask, yet you want to smoke a joint. Oh, heaven forbid that. You can't do that. And yeah. To your current guest, I'd like to ask, your whole issue is a technicality of the law. We have a once-in-a-100-year situation going on right now, but rather than doing what every health official in the world says to do, the very simple thing of putting on a mask, which people obviously won't unless they're forced to, you're going to fight against that. Does that make sense, sir?
State Senator.
Well, again, yeah, go ahead. Thanks, Dave. I'll point back to the we have to be very careful here with ceding power unilaterally to a single person. That is dangerous for everybody. And we give that power for 60 days. At the end of that 60 days, we do not allow unilateral power. Now, Dave, it's very clear where you stand politically. And you're saying, hey, politically, this time, this is great for me because I agree with the governor and I think he should be able to make more decisions. Well, flip the tables on that. Let's put Scott Walker in the office and let's say he's doing things unilaterally without the legislature that you definitely don't agree with. I guarantee you would not be sitting in the same situation if the tables were turned. And that's what we have to keep in mind is it's unilateral power by one person. That's not how our system of government works.
State Senator Chris Kapinga, I want to move on here to look at the COVID relief bill. And Governor Evers had wanted the compromise version of the bill that had passed the Senate almost unanimously weeks ago in January. Why can't Republicans get behind the previously agreed to bill?
What happened was the governor came out and said, hey, here's a proposal for the legislature. I do want to work with the legislature to get something done. Within the legislature, we have the assembly and we have the Senate. So in order to get something done, we have to have those three agree. Now, the Senate looked at it a little bit differently. We actually sat down with the governor and we're like, listen, we know we need to get something done here. And we came to a compromise that the governor said, I can get by with this. And both of us, just so everyone knows, a good piece of legislation in divided government is when both sides walk away holding their nose a little bit and going, I don't really like it, but I can live with it. And the Senate and the governor walked away and said, we've got a piece of legislation here that both of us can live with. We're not real happy with it, but for the sake of just getting something done that will help the people that we serve, we can live with it. The assembly also has to agree with that. The assembly decided in their body that they were not comfortable enough with what the Senate and the governor had agreed to. So they put additional provisions in the piece of legislation, and the governor subsequently vetoed that. Now where we're at is we still have the Senate version of that sitting, and the assembly can choose to say, you know what, it didn't work. We still do feel like we want to get a piece of legislation done. So if we can get them to agree with what the Senate and the governor agreed to, and came out with, then we can get that piece of legislation in place. So we're hoping that takes place. But again, I'm not in the assembly. I'm in the Senate, and we have divided government for the protection of the people. And we have to keep working with the assembly to try to get them to where the governor and the Senate agreed to.
State Senator Kapinga, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
State Senator Chris Kapinga of Delafield, president of the Republican-controlled chamber. Earlier, we talked with his Republican colleague, State Senator Mary Felskowski of Tomahawk. Just ahead, an infectious disease physician fields your questions about COVID vaccinations and the latest interventions in caring for COVID patients. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.